We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
John Tetta! What a score! What a screamer!
It's all there! And a fantastic goal! Arsenal back in it!
And here's Lippert, lines it up, finds the net. Arsenal in front.
It's time to find out if a podcast after a 3-0 win can still break down into a massive argument. This is the Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. My name's Alex Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. Hey, look, we got all kinds of fertile ground here for giving me a raft of shit. We've got Thomas Partey bossing it in central midfield. Not that I ever didn't like Thomas Partey, but let's not get into that. Point is, that's what people think I said, and so that's an opportunity to get on me. We've got Cedric providing an assist and playing really well. Another opportunity to have a go, as they say. We've got all kinds of things. We have Granit Xhaka, who I think it's fair to say there are different opinions about the performance there. So yes, it was a thrilling win that we will celebrate and possibly devolve into a huge argument. So I hope you will stay tuned to that. I just want to let everybody know, I've been talking a lot to Nils from Arsenal Editor, fantastic Arsenal fan, Arsenal business, something he started all by himself, built the website by himself, figured it all out, and just really have to give him a lot of credit for what he's done. And he reached out and said, hey guys, like, you know, do you mind just letting people know about us? And yeah, looked at the stuff and it's great. It's designs, like beautiful, huge prints of legends and new players. And there's mugs and there's t-shirts also and all that stuff. But like, if you want to go to arsenaleditor.com and use Arsenal Vision as a promo code, you can get 10% off and free shipping globally. You can also shop for it at arsenalvisionpodcast.com/shop. I just put all his stuff on our website because I'm just a huge fan of what he's doing. So, I mean, Arsblog gave me the idea.
That 1-0 from the Arsenal?
Yes, that's it. That's the guy. Yeah. And
you
so
can use that.
Yeah, use that. And so the 1-0. Yeah, 1-0 to the Arsenal editor. Yeah, moral of the story is just, you know, when Arsblog started like supporting Arsenal businesses, which is such an important thing to do, you know, it really got us thinking. So we will certainly think of find other businesses that we can spotlight, and we really want to be a positive influence in the community to the extent that we can be. And having said all that, Paul, who has already introduced himself, is on Twitter at Pause in My Pants. Hello, Pause.
Woohoo.
Clive's on Twitter at Clive PFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
Tim, who was stuck talking to me on the Instant Reaction Pod, has had it with talking about Arsenal. He never wants to do it again, so he's not here. Scott will be on with an Analytics Pod this week. And I will just say, since Tim is not here, we're doing the Instant Reaction Pod, and we're talking about the Cedric assist, how it was almost over the line. And I shit you not, live on the podcast, Tim breaks out, oh, it's like the 1932 FA Cup where Newcastle had a goal that shouldn't have been allowed, or Arsenal had a goal that shouldn't have been allowed because the ball went over the end line and the camera rank. And I'm like, stopping. I'm like, all right, stop making this up. Nope. It's a real thing that he knew about from
an FA Cup tie in the 1930s. So, yes, like his brain is just a huge Arsenal computer, and it's all very troubling. Be honest, Clive. Did you know about that one?
Karma's not always instant. That's all I wanted to say.
Was that what crossed your mind when Cedric played that pass, the 1932 FA Cup tie with Newcastle? No.
Clive might have been around for that one, but I wasn't.
No, okay. Yeah, no, I wasn't, mate. Not that one. A couple of years later, I was.
Let's dive into it. We can get into the individual performances in a minute, and I've already sort of highlighted, jokingly but seriously, a couple that need to be discussed. But I want to talk about the first half a little bit. It's so, so important when you look at these games, I think, to really analyze them objectively, not necessarily with the hindsight of what the outcome was. And I think at halftime, there was a bit of concern, right? There was a little bit of concern. And I'm sort of torn because I actually think the concern in this case was maybe unwarranted. I mean, we had seven shots, one big chance. They had one chance that was nothing. We were controlling the game and we were carving them open. So, I think that there was cause for optimism, but certainly it was not as good as what we saw in the second half. And Clive, I'm curious if you have a thought on maybe, you know, was the first half maybe a little better than it was given credit for, or were there some things that maybe we weren't doing that we needed to tighten up to get the goals in the second half?
Yeah, I was one of those frustrated fans at halftime. I was a bit grumpy, and I don't think that's totally unreasonable after Crystal Palace, where we sort of, suffered a little bit. When I thought we got Palace in the day when they had their two forwards. They didn't have those two forwards against Man City, which is a bit of a blow. And they had their two forwards, so they had their exit plan and they could cause us a bit of stress going backwards. And so we didn't get our result and could have lost the game. But against Newcastle, I felt we looked fresher from the first minute. But I was still carrying the luggage of the Palace game in my mind. So I'm thinking, come on, just get the goal. I don't want to have another 0-0. And so that probably was the reason for many people being a little bit angry at the first half without looking at what they were looking at, just what they were feeling with the two games in their minds, right? So I think that was justified. Well, I was one of them. I wasn't angry. I don't get angry too often. I wasn't angry, but I was definitely thinking, come on. And as I was finishing my halftime tweets, I said, the next quarter is our golden quarter. So let's just go out there and do it. After halftime team talk, we tend to be pretty sharp. And that's exactly what happened. So I don't think it's too hard to guess what could have happened. The only reason I said that is because I thought it would happen. And it did happen. We came out a little bit sharper, moving the ball quicker, moving the ball vertically. I think this would probably come up in a podcast a lot. The verticality of the team has changed. And it's changed due to personnel. And it's changed due to a recognition that we've been quite negative in our passing from players that have been negative in the past and allowed to get away with it, and they're changing how they play. And I think, it's not, some of those players have been around quite a while and they're changing how they play because the team needs it. And I think that's going to be a theme of mine actually throughout the podcast. We've got more players doing exactly what the team needs at the right time, and there's still a long way to go on that, but it's a sign of now people playing for the team rather than playing for themselves and their pass completion stats, right? So, I think we were a little bit not quite sharp. Aubameyang does his thing, we'll be fine. But we saw it out after halftime. No drama.
Yeah, and I think, I want to be process-oriented. And what I mean by that, Clive, is I don't want to say that we were bad in the first half because it was 0-0. I want to look at the process and say, were we pushing them back? Were we carving them open? Were we creating chances? And certainly we didn't do it enough, but we had seven shots. We had the big chance that fell to Aubameyang. And I found myself thinking at halftime, if Aubameyang puts that away, are we looking at that half as a perfectly competent, not exceptional, not swashbuckling, but perfectly competent half where we, have all the possession, all the deep possession. We restrict them to one shot, none on target, no real big chances. I mean, it did feel like we had a measure of control and a measure of threat that maybe was missing. Like you look at Newcastle, you look at Brighton, the first halves of those games, one shot against Brighton, two against Newcastle. And the horseshoe passing was mostly, at the halfway line, or at the edge of the final third. This, we had some of the horseshoe passing, but it was a little more advanced and we did create a little bit more. And I think, Paul, you pointed that out in the instant reaction pod that unlike those games where, to use your toothpaste analogy, it never even got on the brush. Here, it was at least pushed up the tube a bit. It just didn't result in the chances. I want to just touch on the Aubameyang first half, though. I think in general that when you look at Aubameyang, how do you evaluate whether Aubameyang is playing well or not? For me, it's all down to, is he getting into good goal-scoring chances? If he is, he's prime Aubameyang, because that's his superpower. His superpower isn't dribbling guys, getting past guys, you know, with the ball. His superpower isn't assists and creating chances and scoring from 30 yards out. His superpower is 1A, prime zones, getting on the ball in the box with chances to score. And you know, if he does it enough, he gets the goals. That's how he gets goals. And the criticism of Aubameyang for me recently hasn't been that he's not taking his chances. It's been that he's not getting his chances. But in the first half, he did get the chances. And I thought that, you know, while obviously it's disappointing not to convert them, the mere fact of him getting into those spots and getting on the ball in those spots was an improvement. And ultimately, that proved to be the case in the second half. So do you sort of take the approach with Aubameyang that as long as he keeps getting into those positions and getting on the ball in those positions, then everything will be right in the world long term?
Moi?
Yeah, toi.
Yeah, very much so. And in a way, like he's a very simple player for me in many ways. Like him not being playing well recently by your definition, which I would agree with, is about him getting chances, and him getting chances is an Arsenal problem, not really an Aubameyang problem. Now, maybe he didn't quite carry himself the way he could have. Maybe there was a little bit more he could have done individually, but it's basically pretty binary. We have started creating far more opportunities. We're playing further up the pitch. Toothpaste analogy kicks in, but we're basically playing in their final third ever since Smith Rowe, Saka, and Laka worked out how to play ping pong ball with each other, and it gets us up the pitch, and we're more vertical, to steal Clive's word, and we're moving quicker between the thirds. And guess what? Miraculously, Aubameyang has decided to be in better positions, getting better chances, and he got quite a few of them in this game, and he put two of them away. And sometimes one can overanalyze things. Don't want to say that, put us out of the podcast business, but it's about creating chances for that guy. He's still got the physicality. He's still got the eye for it. I mean, why would we think otherwise? I mean, eventually he won't have, but until that happens, I'm not buying into it. There'll be a day when he doesn't. This ain't it. This isn't the season. I don't think next season will be the season. Create the chances. That guy will ghost into the positions and put them away. He's not a brilliant finisher. He's a good finisher. He finishes at about XG, so give him lots of XG. He'll score lots of goals. You don't need to overthink it. You know, he's got great movement. So get it up the pitch. He'll end up in those spots.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, looking at the way we played in this game, Paul, like I definitely see a big difference in what we did in the start of the second half in terms of really turning that dangerous possession into dangerous chances. But I think we have to talk about central midfield, and I'll start with you before we go back to Clive, just to say that the Thomas Partey performance is an exceptional one. But I think I can't help but view it in the context of playing alongside Granit Xhaka. And I know that you and Clive both have very specific opinions about Xhaka as a partner for Partey. So before we just focus in on Partey specifically, is there a reason why you liked that partnership and the way they gelled together?
So I wouldn't get carried away with it. I thought, obviously, Partey was great.
Fantastic.
He's
genuinely fantastic.
Yeah. And he's playing like I have hoped he would, based on my little bit of looking at stuff. You know, this was kind of the Thomas Partey I hoped we were getting, and we really saw it in this game, which was always going to create the, well, where does that leave Granit Xhaka? And I heard, you know, I've seen one or two people saying that he doesn't accommodate playing with other people. I don't know that that's right. I think we've seen a couple of games where he's let Ceballos shine or whatever. There haven't been enough of them, and that's not all down to him. So I think he was pretty good at just accommodating Partey. And, you know, he'd let Partey take the spotlight. And Partey was very central a lot of the times. But they found an accommodation. Sometimes Xhaka would push up a little bit. Sometimes Partey would push up a little bit. and they're finding their balance. And because Partey can handle pressure in the midfield, it's automatic that other you don't press one player but not the other. At the end of the day, you got to press a midfield. I mean, you can target a guy, but you're either pressing or you're not. So the fact that he is a pretty press resistant player, I think augurs well for the chances that Xhaka will have a little more time and space in the future. And as long as he's looking upfield, he's generally pretty good. So I thought Xhaka was, you know, pretty good. Kept it ticking along. Let Partey do his thing. And overall, it was a very functional pair of pivots. And I know a lot of people kind of got stuck into Xhaka for various aspects of his game. But, you know, Xhaka's always going to be Xhaka. There's going to be things he's a little ploddy on. There's going to be one or two chances to go for it that he doesn't take. But he can still pass. He still does pass. He's pretty good at hustling if the hustle's upfield, if it's pressing. So give him a good partner. It's a shame he needs a good partner. It'd be great if we had if as a CM he could really do it on his own plus one other. But he does need a good partner, and we don't have a lot of balance with the other partners. Elneny is pretty good, but there's not enough sizzle between the two of them. Then, so I'm just it's more than I'm interested to see how it plays out. Partey shined in this one, and I think Jack was happy to be a compliment to him. And did pretty well in that. You know, I'm not going to go a bundle on Xhaka in this game. He did some good things. There were one or two times he was still a bit stodgy. Mm. But Partey shined, and I can live with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fairly beefy, muscular midfield, too. Okay, one of them ain't that quick. But you don't look at them and say, we're going to rough them up.
Yeah, look, I want to be clear about something, right? Like, you win 3-0, it worked. Okay, it worked. Yeah. Do we need to upgrade the person playing next to Partey? I don't think that can be argued. I don't think Granit Xhaka is the way forward, and I don't think anyone on this podcast would argue that. And I don't even think there's a need to debate who he is at this point in the game, in his career at Arsenal. I think, Paul and Clive, I'll turn it over to you to kind of expand on this, but the issue for me is I look at the game when it was 0-0, and I look at the game when it was 1-0, 2-0, game state kind of stuff. At 0-0... Partey was taking responsibility to find Smith Rowe in pockets of space, to find Saka, to find Aubameyang popping into central spaces. There's a great little moment where Partey just gets the ball, one touch to clear his feet and get around the man marking him, and then fires it into Aubameyang sort of diagonally into a central space at the top of the box. Nothing comes from it, but it's the type of dangerous pass that can turn into an attack. You know, when you look at Partey's top pass combinations, other than Xhaka, and they're Oba, they're Saka, or Smith Rowe, and you look at Xhaka's, and it's Holding, and it's Luiz, and it's Tierney. Not that passing to Tierney is a bad thing, but we know that's where Xhaka wants to go, right? Left wing, spin it up the wing to the fullback, which is kind of all our attack had been previously. And I think Partey gave us the variety, gave us the access to the forwards. I'm not asking Xhaka to create assists. He created no shot-creating actions with his passes in this game. But, like, at least accessing some of those more dangerous players in spaces where attacks can be built. And it's the thing about Partey's performance, it's so eye-catching to me, Paul. pardon me, Clive. Made it through three podcasters before I got to the right one. Clive, when Partey gets the ball, it's one touch to clear, one touch to control, and the next touch is forward, whether that's a carry or a pass. For the Aubameyang assist, the pass isn't the spectacular thing. It's a great pass. But I've seen Xhaka be able to make that kind of pass, right? Long up the wing into space. It's the touches to get clear of the marker, to burst forward. The second touch is forward and away. And that sets Aubameyang on his run. That indicates to the forwards, get going, we're going forward. You always talk about regain, retain. He regains, he retains, and then he goes. And it's that third piece that I think our midfielders have lacked. They regain, they retain, they retain it some more, they retain it some more, they retain it some more, and they go back to the center back. Partey's second touch is forward, whether it's a carry or a pass. And I wonder, Clive, if that's a distinction that you really notice in this game. Because for me, the intention to play forward by Partey was something that really stood out to me as different from what we see consistently from our central midfield.
Yeah, to be fair, I noticed it before he came, right? So I've got some pretty strong views on this player as a centre midfielder. I think he's very, very good. I couldn't think of another player that was more perfectly suited to us in the centre of the park. And sometimes you just walk into a room and think, that's the room for me. I'm needed at that club. They haven't got anything like me. And that's quite clearly obvious, even though he's only played 2.5, 3 games, whatever it is. And so his first touch is one of his tricks, because his first touch is so good, his second touch is obvious. You know, and his first touch is so good, the ball's out of his feet, exactly where he needs it to be to play the vertical pass that you need to see. There's none of this, my first touch is to control it, my second touch is to move it away from the pressure, my third touch is to go backwards. Because what we've seen is organised defences just grab that, right? So what's Liverpool getting the weekend like? And I was really taken aback by the directness of both teams, really. I know Man United were focused on the counter-attack, but Liverpool, when they had a chance to ping it, they pinged it. They passed the ball where the opposition didn't want you to pass it. And we're doing that a lot more now with this group, and Partey's only added to it. And I think, I listened to the podcast you did last night, which was really good, by the way. And
well, thank you. Despite my ranting and raving in the stock down section.
All this, you did. I'll come back to it later, because okay. There's a couple of bits there that I thought was really
meat on the
really
bone.
Good.
Okay.
And I do think there needs to be a little bit of clarity about the type of player that we bought. I know there are issues around, particularly from the stats community, around the wherewithal about buying Partey, but I look at it from a footballistically kind of thing. I look at it that we need this player. Yes, I'd love him to be 24, but he's 27. But we need him. And I look around the league. I don't see anyone better than him in that role. I generally don't. I really mean that. And this will come apparent if he stays fit. We will not want anyone else in our centre midfield real quick or to get used to him. And so I know there's an argument there, and it's a valid argument around spend, where you're going to be in 2-3 years' time. It's a valid argument. But football-wise, we have basically got a 27-year-old Thiago. The way he receives the ball, he hasn't got quite enough disguise, but the way he dominates the pitch of his presence, knowing where the ball's going to drop, knowing where it's going to be, his calmness on the ball, how he makes other people feel calm. And it was really interesting, because before the game, I was worried about Xhaka, but not massively. But I felt in one of the earlier games, it may have been Leicester, he tried to take over the show. So I was worried about the two alphas playing together. But the first thing I did last night was look at the pass combinations. And Xhaka's number one pass combination was to Partey.
Partey, yep. Mm-hmm.
And that means he's not saying he's deferring, because he still had his 100 touches. That's the way he is. But he's recognising this guy can do stuff. That's a Partey played on the slant. And he knocked it to him and off we went. And I mean, if your number one passing combination is on the slant to your partner who's going forward, it's fine. It's no surprise we look more vertical, was it?
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I think these little details are really important. When I look at the statistics now, I'm trying to look at it and say, okay, that's great. That's an indicator. But then what you highlighted earlier is really important. That pass to Aubameyang, it's just one pass. But it's the pressure he had to get out of, people rushing him. They had their two forwards playing against him. Was it Wilson and Carroll trying to press Xhaka and Partey? And he got away from that and ping, over top, we're off and running to the races. Green grass, Aubameyang. I agree with your point about his movement, by the way. His movement is how I recognise his form. Mm. When he starts floating across the grass, you know he's back. Forget the rest, it'll all come. Flying across the grass, bang, goal, laces. And I think Partey, the whole centre midfield thing, I think is really important. It's the second time this season I felt we've got a proper centre midfield. You know, Man United was the other game, and this game was again this game. And I know statistically, I know that Ceballos and Partey is the numbers game. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I know I looked at the numbers. I know that if you look at the best numbers, Partey owns them and Ceballos owns them. So people want to see them together.
Mm.
But we don't own Ceballos. I'm not bothered.
I get your point. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's fair.
I want to see the guys with the contracts play. And then he's coming to the end of his reign, Arsenal, shall we say? And although I thought he was very good when he came on.
Are we going to call that a reign? Really do we want to call that a reign? Can we call it like a sojourn or an Airbnb or whatever?
I'm so glad you pulled me up on that. Other Discord boys would have me on that one. No, I'm so glad you pulled me up. His time at Arsenal, shall we say.
He's coming to prefer end. That.
And that's fine. No problem. £7 million. Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot. We probably get £7 million for you on the way out to Turkey, right? So Thank you very much. I thought you did really well. So Xhaka and Partey, these are the ones we need to invest in our own minds when we're trying to analyze where we're going, because they're the ones with the contracts. They're the ones we own. And the other two are out the door, you know, and then some people want Xhaka out the door. And if we are talking upgrade, then let's have that conversation. What does that upgrade person look like? What attributes do we want? What do you need to add to that midfield CM4? Because we will need four to rotate. So I think this is really the next conversation, which I'm sure we're going to have over the next few weeks.
I just think that was a super, super elite performance from Thomas Partey. And I want to sort of get to how the performance changed a little with the lead. Because I think one of the interesting things is we played with the lead differently in this game. We played with a joy. We played with an excitement. We played with players who wanted to go get into the box and get another goal. They wanted the third. They wanted the fourth. They wanted the fifth. I think that Newcastle were beaten, and that was clear. You know, we have this incredible statistic about the amount, percentage of our goals that we score right after halftime, which is good. I said this in the instant reaction pod, but I think it shows that Arteta is coaching them up at halftime and that coaching is making a difference. And you just see the way the team isn't measuring every pass so carefully, isn't being so nervous about conceding at the other end, the game isn't going to be so tight. The first half, as much as I thought it was an improvement, it still had that tightness, that unwillingness to just sort of crowd the box and go get a goal and play with that joy that we had with the lead. I understand, by the way, it's easier to do that when you're 2-0 up and comfortable, but we sort of need to find...
Do you think that was a major change, Edith? Do you think that was the major change, that the instantaneousness of the passing, was that the thing for you that you saw just after halftime?
Yeah, I definitely think there was some of that. And I think, look, it is. We had 20 shots in this game, but we did have the 7 shots and the big chance in the first half. So the first half, I just thought it lacked, again, like you're saying, urgency is a word that we use too much. I don't know if it's urgency. I think it is a willingness to put more resources into the attack. Cedric started to get forward more in the second half, which allowed Saka to come a little more central, where he was a little more devastating, I felt. But, well, Paul, before we move off of the midfield duo, I think you wanted to just add a little coda to Clive's point about the partnership.
Yeah, so I think your point's really interesting on the limited passing Xhaka had in terms of who he passed to. Tierney, Partey, holding Luis. And look, we all know he'll have a tendency to pass back a little too much. But when you look at where he played on the pitch, you know, Smith Rowe, Laka, and Saka are all kind of drifting to one side. There was almost a division of labor. Partey, you mostly hit these guys over that side. Xhaka was playing it up through Tierney and to Alba a bit, and that was basically his side. Of course, there's no demarcation that stops you doing something different, and occasionally Xhaka would ping it to the other side, which he does for the third goal, actually. He opens up that whole side, and they play up that side with a little discontinuity in the middle of it before you know Cedric's running in along the baseline there. So I think I'm not saying you're not right. You are right. I think it's one must understand that, yes, it's partly his limitation, but also on the job description for the day. That was who he was supposed to hit. And, you know, I think he did fairly good at it. It's one to watch and see how it develops. It's not necessarily in itself bad or good. But Tierney was who he was supposed to hit, and that's how they were supposed to attack along that side. Tierney with Alba. And like, you know, Arteta likes that left-sided passer on that side. So there's a reasonable chance we're going to see a lot of Xhaka over there. And we now have three areas we attack through the middle with Laka and Smith Rowe, up the right with the young lads and Laka, and an overlapping fullback when Tierney isn't forward. But definitely on the left, Tierney bombing forward, and now teams can't stop us by stopping Aubameyang, because we'll come up the right-hand side and he'll come in from the left. We'll come up the middle. So it's all good. We'll have to see how it develops. You know, is it Xhaka holding us back, or are we just leaning into the fact that he can really zip that ball up the wing or ping it to the other side and open up the other side? So we'll see how it develops.
And I'll turn it back over to Clive to finish on this. I'll just say this. If you have a way to look at a pass map, whether two scored or stat zone, I strongly recommend look at the Shaq pass map and look at the Party one. The thing that will jump out at you so much, a few things, the centrality, but also Party went equally to the left as to the right. He sees the whole pitch. And I think Shaka, because of his one-footedness and his inability to get the ball out quickly, he goes to the side that he's more comfortable with more often, which is the left. Now, I'm not saying that isn't partly by design. It may be. But I think defensively speaking, if you have two central midfielders who can see more of the pitch and attack both flanks, you create more problems. Shaka definitely feels much more comfortable going up the left flank, which, fair enough, but Party, you see the difference in his passing. He varied it. It's central, it's left, it's right, it's whoever's open, it's the best available option, which gives you a lot more flexibility in the way you attack. So, Clive, you want to sort of finish up on that, and we'll move on, because I want to make sure, look, we better wax poetic about Smith Rowe and Sacco a little bit in this podcast as well.
I do want to come back to your point, Elliot, on the first half, second half, and the attacking flow.
Let's do it. Yeah, so Clive, you want to finish up on the partnership?
Yeah. Let's be honest, right? So, Party's got more golf clubs in his bag.
Yep.
So you can just see that by the way he swings his foot towards it. I mean, most left footers got a beautiful left foot. Shaka's got to be the only left footer that really, when he kicks it, it looks ugly. But he gets where he's going to get to, right? It's just an eye thing, really. I think the key thing with Shaka and Party is, Shaka, when he plays with Party, I think he feels he hasn't got to do all of the jobs. I think he feels he could just do his job. And I think he'll continually look calmer, knowing he's got a partner that can read the game better than him, probably pass it in a more varied way than him. When you watch Shaka tackle, watch how he tackles within his circumference. So what he does is he stands there, someone comes to him, he doesn't move his feet, he sticks his leg out, big leg, right? So if you go outside his circumference, he's toast. When people run at Party, he can move his feet side to side, he can go laterally, and he can take you outside of his circumference. That's why his tackling stats are so good, right? So, and that's why he's standing up with the ball, because he moves his feet beforehand, so we get transitions. The Party is a transition monster. Now, this is going to benefit Shaka, because I think he gets I've got to lead the team, I've got to be ready there, I've got to put out fires, I've got to do this over here, do that over there. With this guy, I think he's going to calm down and just put that big left diving boot on that ball down the line. Bang, bang, bang. If he does that 40 times a game, we're going to be in business, because he can fit it. Be calm with where he's passing, because we know he can't do it. He can't switch the play like he used to, but he can fit that left-hand side. And it's okay, because we've got someone else now that can do more with the football in more situations, under pressure, not under pressure, chips, fades, switches, verticals, a whole lot, right? So it's all good. It's a team game, right? It's all good.
Yeah, I would say this, right? I mean, think about it this way. We probably had, how many possessions do you think we had in this game? 50? 30? Four? How many times do you think we had possession in the game? I couldn't even really hazard a guess, but it's got to be around that amount, right?
Our possession percentage, you mean?
No, just number of possessions. You know what I mean? Number of times we had the ball in the game, right? You have a possession, I have a possession. How many do you have?
Yeah.
You know, maybe 30 in a game or 50?
Yeah, probably one every 2 minutes if it's going back and forward.
Yeah, so let's say you have 40, 45 possessions or so. Think about this for a minute. You got to get a goal with one of those 45 possessions, or ideally, in this case, three of those 45 possessions. So, you know, every possession is a chance. Now, every single possession, there's an opportunity to score a goal. It may take prime Messi to find it. It might take prime Francis Coughlin. It's so easy. Okay? Got to get a Francis Coughlin dig in there,
man.
Just to trigger
man.
Paul. But here's where I'm going with this. I know it feels like I'm going around the bend, but just hear me out. I think the frustration I had with Shaq, especially in the first half versus Thomas Partey, is the number of possessions where an attack was on, an opportunity was there, and his unwillingness to play the ball, or his inability to play it correctly, or the time it took him to get it out of his feet, lost that opportunity. And there's only so many. So there was one where Aubameyang is in acres of space on the left. And it's the pass, you know, if Shaq is going to play, it's the pass he should be able to play, right? put it out in front of Aubameyang.
First half or second half?
First half. I think it's a first half pass. Yeah, I'm almost certain. Put it out in front of him. Let him run onto it, easy as can be. And he sells it short. It sells it short.
Another one.
And, yeah, and it gets cut out really easily. There's another one where Tierney's overlapping. Again, the pass, he thinks Shaq has got this in his locker all day long. Just play it up the left in the space, and he plays it out for a goal kick. He plays it too heavy. And then there's one, he intercepts the ball. We've been talking a lot about we need to press more, get turnovers more, and he intercepts the ball. And what does he do when he gets the ball from a turnover? And it's so consistent. What's interesting is seeing the contrast with Partey. He gets it, he immediately turns around and gives it backwards. Right? There was another one where Partey does this awesome little tricky move to get around a player and slides it to Xhaka just a little ahead of him in the center of the pitch. Xhaka turns around straight back to holding. And that's what I'm talking about. It's these possessions where you get into a dangerous place, the ball has progressed, or you turn it over in a dangerous spot. And the first, Thomas Partey's first touch is to control and second touch is to go forward. And I think in this game, especially in the first half, where we just needed that extra sharpness, I think a lot of the attacks broke down. Not because the final ball wasn't there, but that opening ball that Xhaka had that was available, he didn't play. And so I may have killed him a little too much in the instant reaction pod, to be fair. A guy plays 100 passes at 90%, great, kept it ticking over, Partey did the thing, we win 3-0. So why bother? I think it's that looking at the way Granit Xhaka played when we had the lead, he is a good time player, Clive. He was on it, he's spinning it around, he's kicking it with confidence, it's getting where it needs to go on time. But at 0-0, I felt it lacked that accuracy, that timing, that weight, that sort of penetrative quality that we got from Partey. And so that's all I'm saying. I'd like to see more of what I saw from him up 2-0, up 3-0, when we're at 0-0, and those attacks are breaking down because we're not getting it quite right. So, and again, let's be clear. This is a player, we know who he is, what he can offer, and the idea that we need to see him change and evolve into something else is probably a little silly.
That's what I was going to say. We know who he is, but I will give him credit. I thought he had a very good game in this game, and I thought he learned during the game. Mm-hmm. I could see his game style changing. This is probably the first time we've seen these two together properly, starting the game, maybe second time. I was really encouraged. You know, I was really encouraged at the relationship they're starting to build. So this keeps one a little bit longer. Look, I personally would like to see something else in that position as we develop, and maybe we go younger and then develop that player in next season. But we all know this guy. He isn't going to change. He is what he is. But yesterday, I thought he did fine. I thought he did some really good stuff in against an average team. But I think the encouraging thing, Elliot, is the two together. And I think we got a string of games coming up where he's going to get tested. And I think we can get a much clearer view on the urgency, what you can do, your technique, where we pass, on the break, slightly deeper against better sides. It's going to be interesting to watch this develop. And I'm looking forward to it, mate. I really am. I think it could be more promising than maybe I've even given it thought for.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm excited to see it. I think that we will learn a lot about this team because they've recovered from a low ebb. And I like what Andrew Arsblog said on the Arscast, which is what we did over this run, you know, the 13 points from 15, if we're being honest, is what we should do over this run, right? I mean, we did what we needed to do, what we had to do. That doesn't mean you take it for granted, certainly not from where we were in our low ebb, but we did what we needed to do. So now we get to see, does this get confirmed as a renaissance or does it get rejected as a renaissance over the run of games coming up? Where, and I will read it out later, but we have a really tricky run coming and we've got all the players in. We found some things out. We found this 4-2-3-1. We've got Thomas Partey back in, Smith Rowe and Saka kicking on, Martinelli now available. So a lot of signs point to stonks rising, and we will see if the stonks continue their bull run as we get into this tough period. And as we finish off just on this period, I mean, Paul, one thing that you asked me is what was different second half. I do think we were just that
I didn't ask you. I was about to tell you.
You were about to tell me. So let me tell you first, then you can tell me if you agree. The one thing at the start of the second half that I definitely think we were doing a bit more, I think there was a little more willingness to just press him a bit. I'm not saying we were doing the full, you know, Klopp, Giggen press in his peak kind of thing. But we pressed a bit more. We took the ball off them up the pitch a little bit more. And I think that allowed us to turn the screw, get the goal, and go on from there. So do you think that maybe we saw just a little bit of the addition of that pressing that we wanted to see to help unlock Newcastle, and maybe that was an addition in the early part of the second half?
Yeah, I mean, I joked, I don't actually see that much difference in the first and the second half apart from results. There was a bit more zip, there was a bit more tempo. We're a bit more aggressive because we had to be, right? We didn't have 90 minutes anymore. We had 45. We're a little fresher because we just, like both games we start, or both halves we start fast. The first minute or so, I know you can't really talk in minutes, but fuck it. The first minute, we're out of the traps like a greyhound in this one. And like there's plenty of good play in the first half to just should have come to a little more. Like there's around 24 minutes, seeing as we've listed all the things Granit Xhaka did not do and all the opportunities. He wands one in from the left and pings and hits Smith Rowe, who has a lovely first-time touch, but unfortunately there's nobody ahead of him. There's lots of good moments in the first half that could have turned into something like the second half. We just give it a little bit more zip in the second half. It's that whole tempo thing, which is that mysterious thing. I mean, if you could just say, oh, well, we changed this one thing, they'd all be at it, but we just zipped it more. We had a bit more tempo, a bit more movement. We leaned into it a bit more because we had to. As time goes on, you've getting closer and closer to nothing left to lose because a draw wasn't an option for us. And we were a little bit more and more aggressive, and people assumed the ball was coming and made the run. That's the only difference I can really see between the first and second half. We committed more to it. People assumed the run would be made and made the pass more aggressively. But they're pretty close, the first and second half. The first half's good. You know, I've looked at it again. It's a good half. We look like a team that's about to get into the penalty box and score. And in the second half, we get into the penalty box and score.
Yeah, and that's fine with me. I think we pushed a little bit more up the pitch. I think Cedric was able to progress the ball pitch a little more, just get into more advanced positions. But overall, I do agree. I think the extent to which the first half was lamented and the second half was celebrated maybe is a greater chasm in terms of the reaction than in terms of the actual performance. So while we are talking,
can I add one last thought as I wrap up, which is like one of the questions was, can Arteta actually coach an attacking team? Is he any good at attacking play? Can he coach attack? And I don't know if he can yet, but we're attacking at the moment and we look pretty zippy and I'm enjoying our football. Is that because of the players we're selecting rather than the coaching? I don't know. I guess we'll find out over time. But we seem to be in attack. You know, it was. Do you see the Monday Night Football analysis? The Neville and Carragher.
No, I try to avoid any analysis that could leak into mine and sound intelligent.
Yeah, you might enjoy this. Did you see it, Clive?
Oh. He's full on ignoring.
I did. I saw some of it. I saw the Smith Rowe bit.
Arsenal fans should go back and sniff it out because it was really enjoyable to hear them wax lyrical about our play. Mm. And yeah, it was funny that they picked on Smith Rowe, but he was kind of, that's where they spent their time. They were talking to him, analyzing him. They absolutely fucking love him.
Yeah, and we're gonna get.
On the attack piece, I think. I never bought into the Arteta couldn't do attack. What I want to know is how we're going to attack. What's going to be our attacking style? Are we going to be a halfway line possession team like City? Or are we going to be a pressing team, counter-pressing team? I'm not sure what our attacking style is yet, but we're just seeing our signing play. We've seen a bit more transition, seen a bit more verticality. Seeing the front four diamond with one fullback normally joining, although sometimes it can be two. So we're seeing five up in that way. So we're starting to see the start of his team, I feel. When he first came in, he came in with a 4-2-3-1, the very first thing he did. He's spoken, not to English press, but he's spoken about being a 4-3-3 team eventually. That would be interesting. I'm looking at Man City, they're 4-2-3-1 at the moment. People are playing a double pivot a lot more. Let's see, right? Let's see what style we turn out to be. Let's not put too many things out there because it changes on personnel. This guy Smith Rowe, none of us have talked about him in August, you know, about being this player. So things happen that can change your thought process.
Not, wait, you got something in your throat, Paul? You can just mute your microphone, buddy.
We all liked him, but none of us could see. Well, I did. Well, let's put it this way. I could see him being...
Paul, just take a lozenge, man. It's fine. Sorry, Clive's trying to make a point. We're just having...
Yeah. And so things happen, don't they? Things happen. We know none of us were picking Saka for the right-hand side, even though he scored against Wolves, for example.
I can literally do that, Paul. Sorry. Go ahead, Clive.
Yeah. So, and I think this is what happens. Sometimes it just changes in football, right? What's in front of you changes your thought process about how you want to set up your team based on players' forms, based on their simplicity of their game, based on how they mesh together. Mm. And I think, you know, I think there's much more to come. I'm still not convinced about our skipper being on the left. I'm still not convinced about that. I think the left sider, for example, but it's going to be so, I cannot wait to see this settle down into something consistent and sustainable with back up to the first choices, and where you don't lose the style and you show a different side to your attacking face. So it's so much more to come because we've got so much housekeeping to do within the squad. But yeah, I can't wait, man. I must admit, I can't wait.
I will tell you this. I hope that the players show the kind of perseverance that you showed in trying to make your articulate and eloquent point while Paul tried to make sure that everyone was aware of his omniscience, and I chimed in with inane humor. So I do appreciate you pushing through that awkwardness to make what was, in the end, ultimately an important and well-stated point. Look, I want to wax lyrical about the young players. I think that is a really important thing to do. What I don't want to do is wax my privates. And I think it's pretty clear that that would not be something that any of us would want to engage in. And most of us don't. I mean, some of you do. Some of you listening, maybe you wax. And, you know, God bless you if that's what you want to do. I don't know if you're allowed to do that right now with the shutdowns. So maybe your situation needs to be resolved. If you're not waxing, then, you know, it's probably just the rusty old razor in the shower situation. You know, that's no fun. So I'm going to make this painless. Literally, this advertisement and the experience. Go to manscaped.com. Put in promo code ArsenalVision. Get the Lawnmower 3.0. Get 20% off in free shipping. Send me a picture of it. We'll talk about you on the podcast, or send me a picture. Don't send me a picture of the shaved privates. Just the lawnmower. I want to be clear. Let's make sure we're not getting into bad territory here. I'm not looking for any dates. At least, you know, my wife has expressly rejected that proposal. So yeah, let's keep this safe and sound and personal and private, because that's what this is about. Look, I have the product and I use it. Not that you want to hear about that, but what I will tell you is, the way I used to have to do that stuff before was horrible. It was horrible. It was something that I did the dumbest ways imaginable. And now I have this thing with this awesome battery that never cuts. It never pulls. It has this awesome ceramic blade. The battery life is long. It works in the shower. So look, if you never want to hear me do this again, there are two ways. First, you can sign up to our Patreon and get ad-free episodes, and then you never have to hear about privates being shaved. Or you can just go to manscaped.com, promo code ArsenalVision, get the 20% off, get the free shipping. And tell me enough. I've done it. You can shut up now. Which is something that people shout at the podcast when I'm talking generally. So why should this moment be any different? But yeah, it is really just an awesome product that you'll love. I mean, at the end of the day, this is easily the most awkward sponsorship to have to read about. But if you really think about it, your eyebrows, your chest, your privates, whatever it is, you do it. You groom the stuff. So you should have a tool that's designed for grooming it. It just seems obvious. All right, manscaped.com, promo code ArsenalVision. These are getting weirder, and they will continue to get weirder until you just go ahead and do the thing. Anyway, guys, is that enough of that? I think, hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
What? I mean, easily one of the most awkward ones so far, right? I think it's up there. Okay, look, let's get into Emile Smith Rowe. And I'm going to start with Clive because Paul did not see this coming, didn't really know anything about the player, and I think it's fair to say that he should collect his thoughts about him since this is just the first time he's even thinking about him or hearing about him. So, Clive, there is a moment in this game where Thomas Partey plays it out to Emile Smith Rowe on the left wing, and he's in acres of space, and I think Partey may have sold him just the tiniest bit short with the ball over the top. No problem for Emile Smith Rowe. What does he do? Takes a first touch beautifully off the outside of his boot, forward, right, just caresses it forward so he can continue running in stride, full speed. It leads to him cutting it back to Aubameyang for a shot that goes, I think, over the bar on his left from the top of the box. His touch is so clean. We haven't had a player that pops up between the lines like that with a clean touch. Well, we've had one, but we're not going to bring him up. It changes everything. The way he is able to manipulate the ball to get him turned and facing and moving forward, the way he sees the options that are there and disguises it. He disguises his passes really nicely. The goal for Saka, I mean, when you make that look easy, you think it's easy. But he splits two defenders with the cut back to the penalty spot. And it's just the perfect play. There's a burst to get past players that surprises them. There's a delivery from both sides that's perfect. And he doesn't always get it right, but you know, do you remember the cross he tried to play to Aubameyang later in the game? So Aubameyang's running on the far side of the box. He's on the right flank. He's running down the right flank, and Aubameyang's there, yeah. And the ball's there to be played, and he just massively underhits the cross with his right foot. And he holds his head, and he knows he's missed the chance. But you know what I love? That's the ball. He knows Oba's there at the back stick. He knows the ball he wants to play. You're never going to get him 100% right, but his vision and his awareness of where the ball needs to go is so good. And I think there's goals in his game as well, which, you know, we saw he had a chance that he didn't quite get right. So, as much as I love Thomas Partey, and I think what he's doing right now is transforming a part of the pitch that was a real weakness for us, what Emma Smith Rowe is doing between the lines, I think is a piece of the puzzle that no one has been able to solve over this last season like he has. I couldn't be more impressed with him. Do you want to disagree with any of that or enlarge the praise for him?
I need the party bit. No need to bring him into it.
No. I love what Partey's doing. I'm saying as great as he's been. Yeah. but Smith-Rowe.
One's a behind the ball footballer, is the connector, and one's the player that he's going to be passing to. Right? So, mm-hmm. So Smith, I did a little from one of my YouTubers today, and mm-hmm. the YouTube title of the Smith Rowe video was a mixture of intelligence and technique. I thought that basically sums him up, right? So there are many made decisions in any game of football, but he seems to make more right ones than a lot of players that are much older than him. Now, his ability to take the ball on the right foot at the right weight to make the next thing easy for him makes the game look so easy. You look at him shuffling around the pitch, sprinting 1 minute, diving at tackles the next minute, left, right, centre, back of his centre mid. I said one a few weeks ago, he does exactly what the game is required. He does exactly what the game requires. I've got no reason to change that thought process, and I don't think I'll ever change it, because he has got football IQ, game intelligence, whatever you want to call it, he's got it. And it's just little things. Like, for example, so Tierney's got the ball, he's been pressed by his winger, he pushes it to the left touchline, he's under pressure, he's sprinting to the ball. Now I know, with my football head, to play a short pass can be very difficult when you're at 100 miles an hour. You really want to fade it over the top. Smart players know, you know what, he needs me to go long. He goes long. Ball drops at his feet. Everyone thinks, that's great. That's intelligence. He knows the stress his teammates are under. He knows I need to be available for them in a certain way, which allows continuity. They did a brilliant thing on the Monday Night Football. I won't repeat it too much, but again, everything's one touch, which gives the man on the ball time to do his stuff. One touch football. That's been the mantra through Arsenal's academy for years. We've got away from it with the first team. One touch, two touch, max. It allows people time on the ball, separation to do their things, continuity. He just plays really intelligent football. And there's no point in going to, it's a sort of football, he's going to translate, he's going to get better at it as his body develops. That cross-field pass, Elliot, he will make it. He will make that because he's got the power to make that pass. You know, that 40-yarder switch play. Once you start switching play from left to right or right to left, everyone's in trouble. Because at the moment he's playing a rat attack game, a short space game. Mm. Get it. Once he starts switching it, because he will develop. He's obviously young for his age physically. He will develop. Once he starts smashing it 40 yards one side of the pitch, the other, everyone's in trouble. He can switch point of attack. He can start shooting from the edge of the area. He can get it out of his feet, bang, shot like Madison. You know, there's much more to come here. At the moment, he's just rat attacking, connecting us. There's much more to come. Much more to come as he grows. And it's just nice. We just need one or two more like him, don't we, really? Because I don't want to see him stop playing with a groin injury for 3 months because we've overplayed him.
Yeah.
We need to get people like that, those intelligent footballers that allow us to be the team that we know. Most people grew up with the Arsene Wenger era. This is a player, we said it before, 2008 Arsenal, slotting straight in. Where do you want to play? You know, you can rotate with Kleber and Riziki and all the rest of it. Very, very easy. Very, very easy on the eye. And intelligence. Football's becoming a game now about what you do and how quickly you do it and when you do it. And he gets it. He gets the modern game. You can't break these teams down with slow thought process. Very quick, very sharp. Really, really enjoyable. Really enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, and I enjoyed this performance as I've enjoyed most of his performances, but I think there's an interesting dynamic developing here, and I want to get your take on it, Paul. And I, just so everyone knows, while Clive was making that incredibly articulate point, was Paul listening in rapt attention, hoping to add to what Clive has said? Sure, that's one thing he could have been doing. What he did instead was find a tweet from December 17, 2019, showing that he said Emile Smith Rowe would become a star because that is something that he wants to be sure that we know. So everybody please go find that tweet, like it and retweet it. We'll make Paul feel really good. And I just want to say condolences to Karl Marx, who in the reply to that tweet says he's trash League One level. So Karl, thoughts and prayers, mate. Paul, one thing that I do think is interesting though is other than your awesome tweet showing your prescience, is that...
And I actually said he'd be a star under, well, I said Pep Arteta, but Mikel Arteta. So, yeah. I was specific.
No. Yeah. I mean, out of curiosity, how much did you wager on it? Nothing?
That's a shame.
Tough break, man.
No. It goes a little further. The conversation goes further. Somebody bets me 20 quid ESR, won't be a star, and won't be at Arsenal in 3 years' time. And I didn't actually... specifically take him up on that, but I said I guess you'd lose.
Can I ask
on
you a
ESR.
Question? Do you yeah. lose the bet if he's not at Arsenal in 3 years' time because he's at Real Madrid? technically, you would lose the bet. All right, listen, Paul, one of the things that I think is interesting from a dynamic standpoint, though, is one of the players that he exchanged the most passes with is Bukayo Saka. He did a lot of work up the right-hand side. You know, his passes were to Saka and to Cedric. Especially in the first half, we see him operating on the right-hand side. And I'm wondering, do you think that's by design so that Tierney can kind of play the left-sided overloads a little bit? It gets Aubameyang free on the back stick, you know, we seem to have this thing with Oba where it looks like Arteta wants Aubameyang to be on the weak side, on the far side, to come in and get chances that way. And obviously the big chance of the game for him that he misses in the first half comes from that kind of buildup. Or do you think it's more that Smith Rowe wants, you know, is finding ways to get closer to Saka because, I mean, obviously Saka more of a high touch combination player than Aubameyang. What do you think is behind the extent to which Smith Rowe is operating more in the right half space, more in the right wing than on the left?
Yeah, I mean, the picture I have in my mind, I think most people have, which is Smith Rowe, Saka, Laka knocking it around to each other. And like when I look at his touch, I kind of thought he played a bit more centrally than he did over the last few games. And then I kind of thought, well, how did Ozil find a space? And he found it off to the wing. So when I went looking at his touch matches maps, he's actually quite Ozil-ish. He'll spend his time on both wings, but the wing he's spending way more time. And you see much more density of his touch map in much more groupings of his touches where he's kind of pinging it around is on the right where he's going to get that quick, you know, Tierney's going to bomb up and down. Aubameyang is not a high touch player. All the quick touch stuff that really suits him is going to come from Saka, Laka, Cedric in this case. Bellerin's really good at that, supporting that 1-2s and triangles. We've seen that. So that's kind of how they worked it out, and that's going to suit Partey because he's the quicker of our two CMs. He's right-sided, so he's going to provide a support for that. So I think we're going to see more and more of that. But yeah, Saka and Smith Rowe have an understanding and use that on the right. Tierney, Alba, and Xhaka in this case, and you know whoever our left center back is with Mari or Gabriel are going to mine that left side. And they'll ping some stuff around the middle with Laka to open it up, but we now have two wings we attack on, and it's very clear Smith Rowe is a key component there. I mean, he definitely goes to the left and plays a support role, as he does in the scenario you talked about before, where he was running backwards to receive the ball and set up the goal. So he's got, you know, he's got flexibility, he's got range, but he does have a favorite side. There's no two ways about it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to decide if that's by design, you know, if it has to do with wanting to get them combined. I mean, do you have a feeling about that, Clive? Because Saka and Smith Rowe have struck up this easy partnership, and it works so well. Obviously, the irony is that it's Smith Rowe from the left supplying Saka in the center for his goal, but overwhelmingly, Smith Rowe operated in the right half space and exchanged passes with Saka out on the right, either in the wing or the half space. So do you sense that that's a design or just an instinct?
No, I think he's more comfortable on the right-hand side. For his youth career, he spent a lot of time as a right winger, you know, and then he moved inside a little bit later. I always thought, you know, when we were predicting players, I always thought he might end up as a right number eight, but he's obviously worked out as a mobile, be everywhere 10, you know, so it's a different style of 10 that he plays, left and right and central, so he just goes where required, right? So as we said, so yeah, I think he's always been, well, not always been, but he was a wide player when he was like 17. When he got in England, the 17 World Cup team, it was from the right-hand side, tall, long-striding driver. So I always thought, you know, with number seven on his back for Arsenal, or be that right eight. So no surprise to me, he's just playing with his mate. Well, if you were the manager, why wouldn't you put the two young kids together? Get them together. Yeah, why wouldn't you? You're comfortable with each other. You haven't played massively together, but you have played together in the youth teams. And you obviously got a connection. Why would you split them two apart? I won't. You know, I wouldn't. You get more output from them, right? They feel comfortable knocking it off. I mean, the goal was telepathy, wasn't it? I mean, geez. The way he strode down the left wing, and what he did beautifully, as Aubameyang brought the ball to him, he was slow. And then he said, go. He went. Aubameyang gives him the ball. Now he's on the run. So, you know, I think it's Lascelles. He's in a bit of trouble now. So he's at top speed. Then he slows down again, stops, starts him, goes. Left foot before he can block it, left foot cross, goal. That is smart. That is somebody beating somebody that's bigger, stronger, faster than him with pure intelligence and change of pace. Right? And he did that and he killed that guy, put him to sleep. So, like, that's the brain of this guy when he knows what to do in football situations. And I don't want to, I can't stress how important that is in the modern game. You know, we watched players just last week make bad decisions on the pitch, bad passing, not make the squad this week. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And then we watched Joe Willock play in a situation where he plays in a frantic academy way, where he wants to do so too much. And he's not been seen on the pitch in the big games for ages. Okay, this kid comes on and he's just like, oh, well, this is all right. I know what to do. The ball's here. Left foot, back foot, front foot, left foot on the run, first touch, whatever you want. What do you need? Mm. I can do it.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. It's just lovely to watch people that understand the game and then can apply what they've learned in training into games, and that is a dream for a coach or a dream for the academy. They must be watching academy coaches to develop these two players in particular. They must be beyond proud the levels that they're reaching. They must be.
Yeah. So the only thing I was going to add to that is just that, like, it is such a coup. I mean, for lack of a better way to put it, it is a coup to have a potentially world-class playmaker who's 20 years old and a potentially world-class end product-laden forward, for lack of a better way to put that, there's probably a much better way to put that, who's 19. And then the other one in Martinelli, who's a teenager. I mean, that fixes a lot of problems. I know I'm redundant and repetitive, and I've said this before, but, like, you almost can't screw it up. It is such a coup at a period where we have so many questions about the squad building at Arsenal and so many questions about the direction of the project and where it's going and how we get out from under some of the mistakes we made. And suddenly you've got essentially three teenagers. I mean, Smith Rowe is just gone 20, who all look world-class in some of the hardest positions to find. Martinelli, a potential nine, and certainly can be a winger. Saka, a winger. Smith Rowe, a playmaker, all at the same time. I mean, it is... extraordinary. One thing that we should touch on a little bit here, though, Paul, and it really impacts two things, which is the Maitland-Niles conversation and the Bellerin conversation, but it's the role that Cedric plays. I don't think this is a masterclass from Cedric. I think it is a professional, good, solid performance, and he gets a real nice assist for the third goal, but he does it playing a little differently than Bellerin, and this is what I kind of want to focus on. When you look at the Bellerin pass maps, when you look at the Bellerin influence maps and all that stuff, Bellerin wants to come into a more central position. Now, I've always felt that that was the role he was given, especially when we're playing the back three and he was playing almost like a pseudo midfielder. Now I'm kind of convinced just who he is, and Clive turned me on to this. Bellerin's first touch with his right foot is interior, right? He comes central with his first touch. Cedric is willing to stay wide, stay outside, drive to the end line, keep the width. And what it does is it pushes Saka closer to goal, closer to the box. Saka got a lot more possession, a lot more opportunities to get into the box, top of the box, central, and he's looking for his shots. There was the one, kind of a wild shot he took at the top of the box, but I love that he took on that responsibility, got there, one touch, hit it, playing a little bit like Pepe in a way, just in terms of finding spots at the center of the box, the top of the box to get into. But part of the way that that happens is by Cedric staying wide of him. And Cedric gets his goal doing something Bellerin almost never does. I don't think Bellerin had one pass against Crystal Palace that came from deeper than the top of the box, whereas Cedric had a few crosses from there, including the assist to Aubameyang. So that to me, more than Cedric being exceptional, because I don't think he had this exceptional quality where you sit up and take notice. He had a couple really nice, skillful moments. He had a little nutmeg back heel that Arsenal put out on Twitter today that was awesome, and he had a spin move. It was a good performance. But it's the keeping of the width and the willingness to drive beyond the forward. Those two things, to me, are very different from the way Bellerin's been playing. So do you think that that was important in this game, and do you think that it's an instruction or just different styles of players?
Okay, so that's interesting. I hadn't quite thought it through, but I mean, for sure, as I pictured the game, Suarez, you know, he does hang to the touchline.
In the second half, by the way. In the first half, I felt he was more restrained, stayed back a bit.
Yeah, and he does have a beautiful whipped cross. And like, now that we're getting four men in the box, crosses where we're like, oh, that guy never hits any of his crosses, they never find anybody. Well, they start finding people when you get four people in the box instead of one or two, and you're wondering why you ever bother. But he can whip a cross, which won't hurt him from wanting to stay out on that touchline. It allows Saka to drift into that pocket inside, so that all works well. You know, Bellerin moving, having a tendency to cut into midfield. I mean, I think Bellerin's pretty clever and finds nice triangles regardless, but having that width there, certainly something that Pep would have enjoyed, I think. And like, the other aspect of it is we scored two goals basically from cutbacks, cutback FC, but quality cutbacks, both of them intelligent, both looking for the man. Cedric was one of them. Smith Rowe for Saka, another one, where like they were specifically looking for their man. And I think Pep would greatly approve, as we're talking about Arteta coaching attack. And yeah, Cedric had, as you said, in the second half, had nice moments. He does have quick feet. I've been puzzled why he's been so poor in recent times. I thought, you know, you and I disagreed a bit with him at the start, where I said I thought he was doing okay, and you weren't quite rating him. And then maybe in the middle, I'm like, well, I'm going to stop arguing for the guy because I just thought he was playing poorly. And then suddenly he pulls this game out of nowhere where we can both, he's playing well enough, we can both get our head around the idea he might, you know, on his day, he might be okay. This was a good performance, and he did show some skills, and his passing, he had a few clever passes and mid-range passes. It does give us a different look to Bellerin. You know, I'm not going to go away from Bellerin. I like him in the attacking third, but the one thing Cedric does in particular, I think, is that whipped cross. So getting four men in the box, I like that, and he should be the better defender. We need to test that out at Arsenal. We've got a tough run coming up, and defensively, we may need somebody who can stay switched on and can do the business defensively. And not all these games may suit Bellerin, so we might get to see more of this.
Yeah. Clive, I'd love to get your thoughts on the fullback issue, and maybe we can weave it into just a quick discussion of Maitland-Niles, who at this point, you know, I mean, we don't have to go back to the summer and say what we should have done, what we could have done, but it certainly looks like the exit is more likely than a turnaround at this point. But do you want to first touch on what Cedric maybe added differently, and then you can absolutely have a go at the Maitland-Niles situation?
I think Bellerin is a... I'll go through the fullbacks, right? It's a position that I look at a lot. My son's a fullback, and centre midfield was where I used to play. So there are two areas that I really focus on a lot. And so Bellerin is a very forceful front-footed fullback. He drives. He's got a wonderful passion for the game. And he puts himself into really high-risk areas, into what I call forward areas. Sometimes that's really good, like in the cup final when he got the, you know, when he got fouled for the goal, etc. And sometimes I think, mate, just hold back. You're blocking our forwards. You know what I mean? And I think this is what Cedric does really well. He supports the forwards in different angles. He's got neat feet, a bit more technical ability to create different passes. Again, Bellerin is very straight lined, but when he goes, he really goes. Do you know what I mean? He's a problem. It's not saying it's a negative. It's a style thing. You know. Now, Bellerin's personality to play in big moments is greater, in my opinion. And sometimes you can almost see Cedric's play what I call mid-table crosses. Get it, whip it. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes we need to be able to play a little bit more. I think he did that really well yesterday. I think it was a couple of occasions he almost put a ball in, but he thought he waited and recycled with Saka and Smith Rowe, and off we went again and got a much better shape crossing from there on in. So he's learning the phases at Arsenal. Maitland-Niles now is what you call a defensive progressor. He's not an offensive progressor from wide areas. And I don't think, you know, his issue is not defending, it's switching on and attacking wise. When you've got time and you're in an easier game and we need you to do things in attacking phases of the game, your accuracy and the way you bend your standing leg and frame the ball so your passing is correct needs to be on point, you know? This is why if you look at Maitland-Niles' history at Arsenal, a lot of these best games have come in the most difficult games. Liverpool, City, the Chelsea's. You know why? Because he's forced to defend one-on-one a lot more in those games. And his worst games have been in the flat-track bully games, where he's got time to think, where he can switch off, but it's too easy for him, what he thinks is too easy, and he's not caring about the simplicity of passing to the nearest man in those easy games. Put him against Salah and Mane, he's probably the best one, right? So again, it's just that he was caught out on the day, on his left foot, in a day where he had all the space, the whole ground, and he didn't use it very well, didn't adapt, and we didn't adapt around him. And now suddenly he's out the building. Well, I don't agree with that. I think Arteta's challenged him. Say, how much do you want to play for this team? And that is exactly the right thing to do. Smith Rowe is showing an example of a young player coming in and basically ripping the shirt off of a £200,000 a week player in Willian. He has ripped it off his back. It's, see you later, mate. You sit down and you can watch me put a tracksuit on. And Maitland-Niles got the same attitude. I've got to come in and exceed expectations. Paul made an absolutely brilliant point last night. He said, he looks too happy not to be playing. I thought, bingo. There you go. I've called him in the past, I've called him a groupie. He looks happy around the players, high-fiving and celebrating. You're not in the team yet, mate. Focus, get in the freaking team. You run faster than anybody, you can tackle everything. Do the simple stuff. Play so well, you can't be ignored. He's the player I would love, him and Pepe, the two. You always hear me talk about these two players. Not because I think they're world-class, because I want to get hold of them. I want to tell them what they need to do.
Shaken baby better. Syndrome.
I want to get them and just go, come on. You're right there. You're at Arsenal Football Club. Are you going to jog it away? Are you going to jog your career away because you can't be bothered to look at the ball at the right of your feet? It's not about technique. It's about focus on your technique. Mm. Focus on it. I would love 20 minutes talking to him to make sure he doesn't mess his career up. Because people only remember the last pass you make. They forget the fact that you've had to play on your wrong foot. They don't care, mate. No excuses. You control your game. You control your game by what you do off the ball. Get your body shape right when the ball comes. Work harder in preparation before the ball comes to your feet. Work harder having a picture over your shoulders. Do these things because you can do it. You've just forgotten and you're not doing it often enough. And it's costing you. It's costing you. And when you're not sharp, you haven't played for a month, you have to focus on all of the basics, the fundamentals, the scanning over your shoulders every 3 seconds, knowing where the picture is as the ball's coming. These things are important. I just want to tell him because I think it's a shame. A 29-year-old on $65,000 a week on a free transfer, on a deal. We mustn't talk about a deal because the player played well yesterday. He's going to kick him out of the club potentially. And that is a real shame, in my opinion. But it's football, right? It's not kindergarten. It's football. Top-level elite football. If you want to end up at Birmingham City or Brighton, you're on the way, mate. You're on the way. You can change it by how you play and how you show people you want that shirt. And that is the competition you need in the squad. We haven't got to sell someone because we had a bad game.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it is also the fact that stocks rise and fall, right? Like, players look like they're trending in the right direction and then it doesn't happen for them and they have to be moved on. And, you know, some
Rob
players...
Holding. Great example, yeah. Rob Holding. Yeah. How many times you heard me say he can't, his feet are clay and the rest of it, and now he looked like bleeding Maldini last night. You know what I mean? Really good.
Yeah, and like my concern about him recently has been more his distribution, and some of the passes he played yesterday were, like, he lobs one into the backcourt for Saka to run onto. Just beautiful. I have to do a double, triple take to make sure it was him.
Yeah, look, it is easily the case that Maitland-Niles could go on and have a great career somewhere else. And he may very well do that. The problem with any of these conclusions is some of them are just situational. It doesn't fit what the club wants to do. You know, not the right player for the way the team wants to play. There's all kinds of factors here. I don't think Cedric Suarez is as good a player as Hector Bellerin. I could be dead wrong about that. But the one thing I will certainly acknowledge from watching this game is that Cedric Suarez did some things in this game in terms of the spaces he occupied and the way he wanted to play fullback that facilitated our attack a little bit better than some of the ways Hector Bellerin has been playing fullback. Now, I am a guy who sees the positives of Bellerin's performance, and I know there are people that are exasperated by that. But I can acknowledge that maybe keeping the width, driving the end line, you know, overlapping Saka and letting him get more central, those things are important and things that maybe Bellerin needs to look at and start to add to the way he's playing if that's not just a pure instructional thing. So we'll see. I think as we start to sort of move on from here, Paul, one thing I want to finish up with is just the idea of how we played with the lead. There was definitely a joy in this game and in the West Brom game about the way we played with lead. Even with the 1-0 lead in the FA Cup and the extra time, we played a little bit more joyfully. I think, I hate to use the term handbrake. You know, it's not only is it the old sort of Wenger canard, but it's very narrative driven. But there is a sort of hesitancy, a nervousness at 0-0 to the way we play, where the final ball isn't sharp enough and the runs aren't aggressive enough. And there isn't just that desire to go play. And then you watch it 2-0. Everyone wanting to get on the act. Everyone wanting to get their goal. Seeing that Newcastle were beaten. I mean, how much of this is mentality? How much of this is a style thing? We've seen Arteta, with a lead, shut it down, sit deep, defend a lead deeper. We didn't do that in this game. You know, I don't know if that's just because this was an easier game for us and Newcastle quit, or if he's decided to take a different approach. But the way we played with the lead in this game makes me think that we should be, it sounds so obvious, we should push to have the lead more, but you see what I'm saying, right? That, like, that extra aggressiveness to get that first goal and be able to play from the front and have more space to play and more joy to play, I think you get a lot more out of this team that way. Do you see a big difference just in the mentality and the dynamic of how we played with the lead versus at level terms?
I do. I think Newcastle were shite. And having that little bit of extra space to play into encouraged us. But I also think there's something different going on here in that we got, I think it was a pretty healthy first half, a pretty attacking first half, not as fluid as we wanted, not as clicky as we wanted, but we were playing football that whole first half. Here we are playing 90 minutes of proper attacking football, and we haven't done that a lot this season. We've been waiting to put together, like, even one full half of attacking football. So I think it's really encouraging that we got 90 minutes where we went for it. We could have dialed off after two goals or three goals. You know, Aubameyang had to go off to take a poo at whatever that was, 75 minutes or something. But, like, he wanted three goals. You know, he should have taken one not for the team. I'm not sure what the expression is. He probably should have found a quiet spot near the corner flag and stayed on the pitch, because there was a third goal in this for him, and he's never got a hat trick for us. Everybody else who got on the pitch was looking to get a goal or two. So, like, right through till the end of this game, it was basically, let's go for it, let's play our football. We kind of maintained that. And I don't know if up till now there's been challenges in terms of getting the level of fitness. But I think a lot of it is, once you're starting to click, football is more enjoyable. Things aren't as tiring. It's not as much of a slog. You know, for us to get a goal 10 games ago or 7 games ago or 6 games ago was such a fucking chore that you might go 2 or 3 games just trying to create enough situations to score a goal. And now it's this fluid thing, which is a payoff for all the good work you're doing building up to it. You're getting these continual payoffs, and it incents the team to keep playing in a particular style. It's a lot more fun attacking than defending. And so I think there might be something to that. Obviously, we're about to run into a team or two who maybe won't give us the option to attack for long periods of games. But against teams like this, been a long time since we put together two good halves of attacking football where it looked like we should be scoring goals every 10 minutes. And certainly I think if you look at the first half again, knowing that goals are coming later on, you'll think that's a pretty good first half, and you see it click up a gear in the second half, and you definitely think in the second half, we're going to get a goal every 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I it's so hard sometimes when you see a team that's been in the throes of such disarray play with like a verve and a joy and a effectiveness, and then trying to connect the dots and post hoc come up with a reason for it. It is definitely the case that people, myself included, go too far on saying there's no talent in the squad when it's losing and saying that these are world-class players when it's winning, which kind of leads me to the last point, Clive. And I think this is really it now, because we've gotten through a run where we went 13 points from 15. And I think it is fair to say that, you know, again, not to constantly just reiterate what Andrew says on the Arscast, but you could do worse things. This is what we should have done, right? This is really what we should have done in games against Brighton, West Brom, Palace, Newcastle. I mean, to be fair, Chelsea is you know, I mean, is it an easy game, actually? Well, we can discuss that another time. But now it's Southampton away, United, Wolves away, Villa away, Leeds, Benfica, Man City, Benfica, Leicester away. So between now and Burnley on March 6th, all of these games, Southampton, United, Wolves, Villa, Leeds, Benfica, City, Benfica, Leicester, and the funny thing is right after Burnley at Spurs, none of those are games you go into and say, this is it, we're 3-0, easy. And not that you felt that way about any game recently, but certainly, you know, in the way we've been improving, you look at that Newcastle game and you target that as one that could be a banker, same with West Brom. We don't have any of those coming up. So Clive, what needs to happen now? How important is this run in sort of as the crucible in which this team becomes forged? And we really find out, is it the team that just picked up 13 points from 15 and is on the up? Is it the team that's closer to what it looked like when it was struggling, that's still imbalanced and needs to be fixed? What are your expectations from what looks like a very tough run on paper and what the team needs to show over the course of really the next month and a half?
Yeah, well, firstly, you know, I think we've been podcasting, what, 3 years or so? I'm not sure I've ever predicted we're going to lose a game.
Yep, me neither. 10-0 every game.
Right, so but I am not overly concerned about these games. And my reasoning is, I think we play better against teams that play us. I'm more concerned about low-block teams. Right, so we've had a few low-block teams recently, but the Chelsea game, when they played us, we do fine. You know, the way we transitioned yesterday, we broke into open field, right? And I think we're good at that. We did some. Newcastle did press us a few occasions, so we went back to the old school, playing it out from the back and transitioning for the whole pitch. There's a few things that have come in that give me hope. We've genuinely got three, decent centre backs, four decent centre backs. Sorry, one's injured, and so we've got some rotation options there. We've got 110 right backs. We've got one left back with a kid that not really done that. It's very difficult to replicate that, but on defensive side against better sides, he can do a job out there on a left back situation. Centre midfield, we found our signings, walked in the room and said, by the way, I own this space here. I'll get us going. That's something we didn't have pre-Christmas, and to see Xhaka sort of defer slightly when he needed to win the ball for him and give it to him quickly as the game went on was encouraging. To see Elneny come on and realise that he's got to work harder and was sprinting around the pitch doing everything for the period he was on. Again, that's encouraging to make sure we can nurse these two players through this period. Our superstar strikers starting to float on the grass again. There's some signs here. Lacazette's found a bit of form. We know about the young kids. The worry is we need a little bit more up top. So we need one of Eddie, Willian or Pepe to strike a bit of form. And I'm worried that we're going to need it at a situation where we're 1-0 down in the game. They're going to come on and we're going to expect them to be miracle workers. So the FA Cup game against Southampton is really important for their sharpness. So we add some depth on the bench so we can change things during these games. But fitness-wise, health-wise, we're in a decent place. We've got a depth of squad with the youngsters coming in. A little worry about certain experienced players' form. We're solid. We're keeping clean sheets. And we transition. I'm all right with these games, mate. Come see me in a few weeks' time, obviously. Fine margins, the ball is round, the grass is green, all the rest of it. But I'm all right. If we walk into these games where we are now, compared to where we were a few weeks ago, we're in not a bad place. Not a bad place, So I don't know if you guys agree with me. That's how I feel about this run coming up.
I think if we can get our key players out for each one of those games, the two young lads, Lanka Alba, are generally fit anyway, so that's okay. If Partey can stay fit, if Tierney can stay fit, that's 5-6 players if we're getting them out. I agree with you, Clive. I mean, we're not going to romp through these games and rank up the wins or anything, but compared to, say, last year, I mean, I think against our current fixtures we've played so far, we might actually be a couple of points ahead of last season, miraculously. And I think we can come through these games pretty well on a comparative base. We're not going to rack up wins, but we may get reasonable number of points. These are fixtures. I think we can look pretty good in with those players if they're available. I think we're going to hurt some teams that we wouldn't have hurt in the first half of the season. There's nobody facing us this time around if those players are on the pitch for us who are going to think they don't have a game on their hands and that we're not dangerous, whereas 5, 6, 7 games ago, we just didn't know how to score.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, guys? I mean, football is a game where trends take time to emerge, but where opinions take no time to emerge at all. And I, as someone who is opinionated, I concede that's about me too. But like, we did a podcast about, and believe me, I got an earful from people telling me, ha ha ha, you didn't want the Willian move after the Fulham game. Because when we started this season against Fulham, Willian had his best game that he's had for us and has not looked a fraction of that player since. There are plenty of moments in football that can confirm your bias, but don't turn out to be, actual impactful realities. They're just moments. And so I think we're going to find out if these, I mean, look, there are plenty of people go, oh, say you still don't want the Partey transfer. Well, setting aside that, I think you can distinguish whether a player is a good player and whether a move is a good move. I mean, Lionel Messi is still a good player. You wouldn't want to sign him this summer, right? But like, I think it's interesting that, the guy has played, 4 or 5 games. He just bossed the midfield against West Brom. We're acting like the Leicester game never happened. Let's see. Let's just take a beat, be excited about the direction of travel. And now let's see. Does Cedric Suarez start one of these next big, tough games coming up? Can Thomas Partey boss the midfield against Aston Villa? and turn around a game that was pretty ugly for us the last time we played them? You know, can these players, you know, can Smith Rowe at 20 consistently produce elite playmaking performances when the space isn't there, when we don't have as much of the ball? These are the things we're going to find out. And my hope is that, yes, these things will continue to be the case. And my belief is that they can continue to be the case. But it is always a challenge when you have to express your opinion in the moment, but when you don't learn the real truth of the situation until over a stretch of time. And I think that this next month and a half gives us a really, I called it a crucible. I think that's what it is. It is a chance where some of these opinions will be forged in this crucible as well and proven correct or incorrect. But you know what, guys? Like, we're going to come out of this with that Burnley game before the North London Derby knowing a lot more about these players and this team and this coach and where we're headed, is my opinion. And that will have also included, hopefully, progress to the next round of the Europa League in a very, very tough draw against Benfica. So a lot of interesting discussions to be had, and I think interesting conclusions to be drawn over the next 6 weeks or so. So unless you wanted to add to that, Clive, did I hear a quick intake of breath?
It's good stuff, mate. But this is the fun, isn't it? You know, seeing the journey of these players, how they develop, how the system develops, how the relationships develop. Opinions are just a moment in time.
Yeah.
Right? They're just a moment in time. And then somebody learns something about themselves, maybe eradicates a weakness through in coaching or training, and then their opinion changes. You know, we watch Rob Holding, for example, not hit a pass for 6 months. Suddenly he's back spinning the ball into space and he's stopping on someone's foot. Yeah, and now he's just got his confidence. He's got his shape right. And when he first came, he was a great passer and he lost it. You know, now he's got it back again. You know, and it's like, this is the fun, right? It's not about being right. It's about going on the journey with your thought process. And soccer. We're lucky we got a platform where we can actually talk about our journey and someone can remember what we said and then remind us what we said. But actually, that was just then. And this is now, right? A few weeks ago, this manager was toast. And now he's had 4 wins out of 5. Now, some people are waiting for 2 losses so they can remind us that he's toast and he's crap and we should have never got him. It's up to you how you want to go for your journey. We just got to respect it and that's it. But this is the fun. This is the fun. It's watching these players now get tested by a different set of players. Mm. And this is where I do think the coach has got some work coming up. Because now there's a little bit of stability in shape. And I am now looking much harder at him. I wasn't looking at him before Christmas because I just felt there were situations there that was out of his control, what's happened in the squad, etc. I'm looking at him now. Really am looking at him now. I think this is a chance for you to show what you can do from a coaching perspective to get some automatisms, whatever you call them, within this squad. And I really think this is the moment. This is the moment that people should be looking at our coach because we've got a group of players that are pretty confident. You know, yep. So let's see what you can do, coach. Let's see what you can do.
And I'll tell you something. I mean, you just touched on something that struck me. You said, you know, some people wanted him out and then he's 1-4 out of 5. And, you know, what are they thinking now? It's almost like what's going on at United. If you could get a United fan off the internet and alone in a room, not that you'd want to be alone in a room with a United fan, and said, are you happy that Solskjaer went on that run? You know what I mean? Because, like, Solskjaer was gone. 1 loss at Everton and he's gone. And now he took but prior to this weekend, he took 28 from 30 points, something like that. Or 31 of 33 points, something crazy. And that's the interesting thing about football, right? You can get on a run and it can either give you the truth of a situation or it can obscure the truth. I'll give you another great example, guys. Anybody remember Unai Emery? Anybody remember the run he went on? Was the run he went on, what was it? What did we do? 26 out of 29 points or something? 20 games unbeaten? Something like that? Something insane? What was it? Do you guys remember?
I think it's 22 games. I want to say 22. I don't know why, but
unbeaten.
Hey, I could be wrong.
So was that the signal or was that the noise? Was that the truth of the situation or was that obscuring the situation? Well, in the end, it wound up being the obscuring of the situation, not the truth. And so that's why it's so hard expressing opinions in the moment, because the information in the moment looks so clear and it's telling you such a truth when actually you don't know. And that's why I love this run coming up, because I think we will get a lot more signal and a lot less noise, and it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. And I hope that what we've just seen is a sign of what we're going to see to come. And I'm optimistic that it will. So Paul's on Twitter at Pause My Pants. Thanks, Paul.
22 games, apparently.
Yeah.
I was right. I was right, Paul.
and as we all know, the goal is to be right.
I've got to be right. Oh, thank you, Lord.
The goal, though I have never proven this to be the case, is to be right. You wouldn't know it from listening to me. Clive's on Twitter, ClivePFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
My name is Elliot Smith. You should be blocking me on Twitter. Yankee Gunner. I mean, look, block me on Twitter. It's that simple. And if you want to hear me lose my absolute run of myself, you can listen to the Instant Reaction Pod on Patreon. We do love you. Thank you so much for being here. Just means the absolute world to us. And I know these are ups and downs. These are ebbs and flows. And, you know, when I go onto social media after these episodes and sort of see the reaction and seeing how people vehemently agree or vehemently disagree with some of the things we've said, it's all part of it, right? Like we are all just having this conversation together, trying to figure out where we're going. These are confusing times in a way because of the vicissitudes in our performances. But, you know, long may the discussion continue and long may this resurgence continue. That's what we hope. And it will have to continue. This is a tricky one, guys. This weekend, when we talk to you after Arsenal 10, South Shrewsbury 0.